Relationships Under Construction invites you to attend their annual fundraising banquet on Thursday, April 6th at the Villa Milano. Relationships Under Construction is an international organization headquartered right here in Ohio. Relationships Under Construction teaches middle and high school students healthy relationships based on virtue, not physical intimacy. Help Relationships Under Construction reach more youth with the truth about relationships. To register for the Relationships Under Construction banquet on April 6th, go to relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
It's March Madness, but we're not talking basketball. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Hey, long time no see you here in the studio.
It has been a while, but thankfully all the things worked out so that we have a great opportunity here for me to actually visit your newly remodeled facility here and work directly face-to-face with you for at least this recording.
Well, let's face it, and the place is a dump, which, is kind of true to form. However, if you'll notice in my dump, it's mostly in boxes. So I'm cleaning out boxes that I moved last March, so a year ago. But we've been remodeling a facility to use as a warehouse. And we started working on the complete remodeling in September. And it's taken this long. Our good friend and fellow member of the Institute for Principled Policy, Bruce Purdy, and I'm going to give a plug in, Purdy Handyman Services out of Lancaster.
Yes.
Purdy Handyman Services. Bruce, you owe me money.
No, wait a minute. Don't you owe him money for all of this work?
Oh, no. I've paid him. We're up to date. So now we're going to have to barter. No, I'm kidding. I'm giving him a free plug. Purdy Handyman Services. You can look him up on Facebook.
That's P-U-R-D-Y.
Purdy.
Yes.
And he did a beautiful job.
Absolutely.
On helping me just do the things that needed to be done around here. He is actually very much in demand, so make him more in demand. Purdy Handyman Services. That being said, you heard at the beginning of this broadcast, you would have heard an ad for Relationships Under Construction and their upcoming banquet. I invite you, please, to give us a ring or send us an email because we'd like you to come sit at our table for Relationships Under Construction. That's April 6th at the Villa Milano in Columbus.
On
Schrock Road, almost in Westerville, but not quite. It's in Columbus. The Villa Milano, if you're active at all in anything that throws a banquet, chances are you've been to the Villa Milano. It's a very recognizable place. I'm getting so I can almost find my way around in the dark in there.
Not that you need to do so. They have plenty of adequate lighting.
We're taking a different approach to our presentation this year at the Relationships Under Construction banquet. We're actually going to have people that do the teaching come in and tell you what they do. Now, I'll be quite honest. This is the kind of thing that I like to go to see when I go to a banquet. I like to find out exactly what you do with the money. Because let's face it, folks, at the end of the presentation, you're going to get asked for money. And the reason you're going to get asked for money is Relationships Under Construction is going to need that cash inflow to make sure that we have the money to get to the end of the year. What is it that we do? Well, we do education that goes beyond abstinence education to actually help young people understand why it is that they should wait for marriage and why they should only have one partner between the time they reach sexual maturity and the time that they get married. Why it's better to wait. And we teach them that statistically you avoid all kinds of bad things. You avoid having to make decisions that you don't want to make. And you avoid catching diseases you don't want to have. And it's a highly successful program. Unfortunately, it's not a free program. It costs money to run it.
And right. It's free to the schools.
It's free to the schools. But those of us who are on the board and who serve as advisors, like Barry does, and I'm on the board. So just a word of full disclosure here. I'm on the board. The fact is that those of us who do contribute are contributing so that the schools can have it for free. Now, guess who our top competition is to teach these things in the schools?
Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood. Barry guessed it. How did he know? Gosh, I don't know how he knew that. Oh, maybe because he's on the advisory panel. Well, that being said, let's face it, folks. Planned Parenthood does not teach the same stuff we teach. So we do need your help. We are actually working on a system right now. It's in the planning stage. We don't know for sure whether they're going to be doing it, but it's like 90% set up. That if you can't come to the banquet, but you want to see what's going on, it's going to be live streamed. We just had discussions with someone who told us they could live stream it. So if you want to see what Relationships Under Construction does, you can go to relationshipsunderconstruction.com. And you can also look there for the possibility of live streaming. I think it's basically a done deal. I know the board voted to set it up. Whether it's done or not, you'll know. Pay attention to the broadcast here because we'll let you know for sure. But folks, this is a very worthy cause, and it is a cause for which we need you to dig deep. If you believe in teaching young men and women the right way to approach issues having to do with their sexual health and their mental health, then get involved in Relationships Under Construction. Come out to the banquet. April 6th, 6 p.m., Villa Milano, Columbus, Ohio, Schrock Road.
Excellent, excellent. We hope to see many of you out there. And if you do come, look us up and tell us that you listen to us on WLRY or online or wherever else you might catch us. We'd be glad to talk with you.
I'm hoping Barry will be at my will come sit at my table.
Well, we'll see about that. We're still trying to figure out what our schedule is
like. I know. It's budget time.
It is budget. Well, and again, in our bump opener, I talked about March Madness. And, of course, we're recording this on the opening day of the NCAA basketball tournament. Yes, that's right, folks. Neither Chuck nor I are major NCAA basketball guys where we have to basically be camped in front of a TV screen now for the next 4 days from noon on Thursday until midnight on Sunday to figure out how our brackets are going to explode on us.
I haven't done a bracket in more than 20 years. I see no point in it since I don't know that much about the teams playing. At the time, I did what everybody else did. I lived in Michigan. I graduated from Michigan State University. I always picked Michigan State University to go really far. And generally, in that time frame, I wasn't far off.
No, you weren't too far off then. I'm not sure they're going to go that far
now. Yeah, it's a little different story these days.
It is. But the kind of March Madness that we're talking about is a different kind of madness. And sadly enough, it's one that will last with us longer than March. But it's funny, Chuck, because, you know, here we are on Thursday the 16th. Okay, I'm dating us. But yesterday was March the 15th, or what was called the Ides of March. Now, for those who are not familiar with history, it was supposedly this date in, 44 B.C., I think it was, a group. Now, everybody, chucks it up to Junius Brutus, who was the trigger man, so to speak, or the guy with the knife in his hand. But it was actually a group of disaffected senators of the Roman Senate who were tired of Julius Caesar being basically an oligarch. And they called him to a meeting. And when he got there, they, from their robes, pulled out their blades and all of them stabbed him to death.
Yes, et tu, Brute, or et tu, Barry, as we have. but et tu, Brute, you too, Brutus, is the question. And that's from William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
Right. Supposedly the last word Caesar said as he looked up as his best friend.
Was his adopted son.
Adopted son, yeah, was putting the blade in him.
Yes, Brutus was his adopted, essentially, not legally, but he had basically taken him in and raised him. And the reason these guys did it was that Julius Caesar had declared himself dictator, as Roman law allowed him to do during a period of civil war. A Roman general was allowed to be appointed dictator for a limited period, and I think Caesar wanted to, since he was an imperialist, essentially wanted to extend that dictatorship into perpetuity. And Brutus and the boys who stabbed him in the Senate often get a bad rap. Well, they were essentially being a tyrannicides. And what does that mean, tyrannicide? The killers of a tyrant, because Julius Caesar was attempting to make himself into a tyrant. So is it ever a good thing to take the law into your own hands? Well, no, but these guys were the law. They were the Roman Senate, and they were attempting to protect the Republic. and keep it from going to an empire.
Yes.
Sound familiar?
Just slightly.
Yeah, it does sound a little familiar. Now, am I advocating that whatever, name your least favorite politician, that he be stabbed to death on the floor of the Senate?
Let us clarify that right now. Yes. That is not what we are, or what we would ever advocate for, okay? Because there are much better ways to get rid of a bad legislator.
Yes, especially in our system.
Than by shedding blood.
Yeah.
You might have to shed some blood, but it should be yours as you're going knocking on doors and wearing your feet out for a good candidate to take their place.
There you
or
go.
To replace them if they're not on their way out the door already. But, you know, again, here we are, March Madness, the Ides of March. Well, there was a group that thought they would call the ruler here to the forum and then put a knife in him. Didn't work out so well
for them this week, did it?
You see, because ever since the primary and the ascension of Donald Trump as the nominee for the Republicans, there had been a hue and cry that had gone up from the left, led by both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, to have Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, release his personal tax records. In other words, they wanted to see his IRS forms, what he was paying to the government. Because, you know, the not releasing them was like the biggest affront to the American people that they could possibly come up with. And it's, Chuck, this is one of these standard issue plays out of the leftist playbook. Put something out there so that we can comb through it. We can comb through it with your blessing, so that we can find something that we can spin to beat you up with, because we're having trouble doing just that. And Donald Trump didn't fall for it. He wouldn't release his taxes. I don't blame him a bit.
No, that's no look.
He's a private citizen. And honestly, so are government officials. When they're paying their taxes, they're private citizens.
Exactly. I've always hated the idea that if you wanted to run for some high office, you had to release your taxes. Okay, why? The only reason is because we live in an age of essentially eat the rich. In other words, if you're rich, I can remember somebody who I knew to be a liberal at the time, who himself was endeavoring to become rich, but he said, sure, everyone who's rich had to steal money at some point, had to do it dishonestly. And I said, well, first of all, that's an absurd assertion that you're going to have to prove. I'm not going to give you that presupposition.
No, of course not.
You're going to have to prove your point. And the fact is then that what you're saying is, since you aspire to become rich,
uh-huh,
that you're willing to do something dishonest to get there. And he said, I do want to become rich. This was a man of Asian descent. He was from India originally.
Okay.
But he says, I want to do it honestly. And I said, so you're not going to give on the idea that someone else might do it honestly too.
Right, exactly.
Now, I've never been a huge fan of Donald Trump. And one of the reasons I keep hearing what a wonderful businessman he was, this was in the 90s, and I said, yeah, he learned how to manipulate a drastically controlled real estate market.
Yes.
Well, that just means he's smart. And he's a good businessman. And he does know how to manipulate a drastically controlled real estate market, because if you don't know how to control it in New York City, you are sunk.
That's right.
Because it is a labyrinth of regulatory regulation of nightmare proportions. This is essentially, it's a warren, if you will, a rabbit warren of turns, twists, dead ends. Any place that somebody doesn't like you, if you walk in and they don't like the way you look, you don't get a permit. You know, it's essentially anarchy. And what Donald Trump has learned to do is maneuver in that warren.
Well, and again, as they were pulling out the long knives, because what happened this week was supposedly some reporter somewhere magically had appear in his mailbox copies of pages of Donald Trump's tax returns, which it's a felony offense to have, to be in possession of, or to release information from another person's taxes, okay? Just flat out, unless it's under a court order of some nature, or the person voluntarily releases that information, which is what they tried to get him to do during the entire campaign, you don't have to do it. And if somebody does do it on your behalf, i.e., they do it regardless of whether you want them to or not, they can go to jail. Well, it just so happens that this reporter magically found a couple of pages from Donald Trump's 2005 tax return. And, well, you know, being the good investigative journalist he is, he immediately handed them off to Rachel Maddow of MSNBC. You and I both pondered that
yes,
and said,
yes, we
well,
did.
You know, what really was happening here is as long as he stays anonymous, his handing them off to somebody else and they have them and read them puts them at a lower level of scrutiny than the person who how did you obtain them in the first place person. And so as long as he stays silent and hands them off to somebody else to take the heat for having them, he can stay out of jail,
well,
he or she.
The thing about it is he didn't remain silent. He came on the program with her. Now, here's what I found curious. This man has a byline. He has a name. He is a, quote-unquote, a noted journalist. You know, supposedly a Pulitzer Prize winner, which, okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you what. That impresses me not at all. That's sort of like when somebody tells me that someone is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. If you recall, we had one of those as president.
Yes.
And he spent his entire 8 years dropping an average of one bomb every 20 minutes.
Yes.
During his entire presidency. So much for Nobel Peace Prizes. It's political, as is the Pulitzer. And so this Pulitzer Prize winner, who has a byline, didn't bring out this Trump scoop under his byline. He handed it off to Rachel Maddow at MSNBC. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever seen her, well, it's an experience. She is arrogant. She's cocky. She isn't looking so arrogant and cocky in the aftermath of this mess. But the fact is that he allowed himself to be interviewed on her program, and they spent the first 23 minutes continuing to hype up, doing the propaganda thing about, yachts lined up side by side and all the let's hate the rich rhetoric. By the way, Rachel Maddow makes plenty of money at MSNBC. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, no. She makes tons of money.
Yeah, millions per year. But that's different because, I mean, she's doing the work of the just in her own mind. But that being said, then after 23 minutes, she comes out in this huge hype that she'd done all day, tweeting and running ads on MSNBC and, you know, running the hype up. Here's what we have. And it was two pages of a tax return that basically showed it was the meat of the tax return, the part that the IRS really honestly takes a real close look at.
Right.
The part that says, how much did you make? Send a huge amount of it in. And that's exactly right. What we found out, that Donald Trump in 2005, 12 years from now.
All right. 12 years ago.
12 years ago, 11 years before he got elected president of the United States, that he made $150 million.
Yes.
And he paid $34 million in income, $38 million in income.
$38 million on $150 million income. And this was supposed to have been the great bombshell.
Yes.
And this was the knife that they were going to stick in him. And when Rachel Maddow was reading it, because it was obvious she hadn't really reviewed it before she went live on air, as she's reading it out, the look on her face was priceless.
Yes, it was.
Because it was like, have you ever seen somebody get crestfallen? This was a perfect example of crestfallenness. She went from gloating to, I can't believe I just let this out on the air. I can't believe I just helped this guy.
Well, basically what she said was, as I watched the clip, well, this is what it is. And aside from the numbers being huge, he paid an awful lot of taxes.
Exactly. The thing that they were hoping was a fait accompli, that, you know, he had hedged his way and sheltered his way into paying basically nothing so that they could get at him of being, you know, one of this hyper rich, you know, arrogant, da 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 da. Turns out that Donald Trump's like you and me. He just deals with bigger numbers, but his percentages are similar to what we pay. Chuck, I pay 24%+ when, you know, in some years I have had to pay that kind of rate.
Yeah, I've had to pay up around that before. But the thing, what's interesting about this is what was the spin? What was the spin immediately?
Well, the immediate pivot was, look, he wrote off $100 million in losses.
Yes, yes.
It's like, and that was bad, Chuck, to the liberal left, to the mainstream media, MSNBC and CNN and everybody else. It was horrid that this evil man would write off losses. Yeah. Now, okay, Chuck, all right, I guess we're setting a new standard. No liberal can ever write off a loss on their taxes from now
there
on, or
go.
Else they're hypocrites.
Well, here's the deal. His actual calculated tax was $3 million. So he still owed $3 million, but the alternative minimum tax gigged him for the other $35 million. The alternative, and so they're like, see, finally, a good thing out of the alternative minimum tax. In other words, you stole $35 million from someone who made $150 million.
Except there's only a problem with that. The alternative minimum tax didn't come into effect until, what, 2008?
The analysis, no, it's been around because
I thought it was a little bit early.
No, it's been around for quite a while because I've had to calculate every time I've calculated my taxes. You better do an ATM calculation to make sure you're not paying too little.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that's the spin, and it seems that $35 million of that tax was alternative minimum.
Okay, so basically, he followed the rules that were set forward mainly by Democrat-controlled Congress and Democrat administration because from 1992 until 2000, who was running the government?
Yep.
Okay, so here you have that strike one. So Rachel Maddow's blade obviously is made of tinfoil because when she went to stab it into Trump, it kind of didn't work. And I think she might have gotten a little aluminum cut on her hand. Well, okay, so more March Madness, and you and I talked a little bit about this as well. You've called this the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes, Trump derangement
syndrome. And honestly, I think you might be able to get this classified in order to get some like funding, you know, maybe create a nonprofit to get some funding out of so that you can help people with this.
I wish I'd invented it, but I stole it from another pundit.
But one of the latest, we'll give the attribution when we can. But the latest aspect of Trump derangement syndrome comes from Hollyweird. Specifically, one member of the Hollyweird elite, known by the moniker of Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd.
You know, one of the Judds, you know, not the singing side of it. She's the acting side of it. But she, you know, the Judds came from Kentucky. And so she is a big Kentucky fan. Matter of fact, they were going to run her for governor in Kentucky. And that didn't quite work out so well. Or for U.S. Senate against Rand Paul, and that didn't work out so well. But Ashley Judd, as you know, the University of Kentucky is in the NCAA.
Yeah, she's an alum.
She's an alum, and she loves the basketball team. She went to a game that they were having here. I think this was like one of the conference games. And according to her, because we've only heard it from one side, she was approached by this 60-something-year-old man who basically was chatting her up a little bit and, you know, was obviously a Kentucky fan too and took a picture this guy was the Kentucky fan, but they were in Virginia. And he was from this little town in Virginia, I think Fancy Gap, which is the setting of one of Ashley Judd's movies. They had filmed it in this area. And so the other claim to fame of this area in Virginia is that town went 80% for Donald Trump in the 2016 presidential election. And according to Ashley Judd, after taking a selfie with her, this man turned around and then started berating her and said, "We're still for Trump." And that triggered her, Chuck.
Well, of course.
She had to find a safe space because she was frightened and she was scared that these people were going to somehow harm her. and that it's all Trump's fault. And I have to say, Chuck, I mean, if you think about it, the biggest names out there that have Trump derangement syndrome are all actors because, guess what, this is a big put-on.
Yeah, there are more than just actors because, get this one. Now, shows what's really wrong. Mm-hmm. If you recall, a few months ago, or a few weeks ago maybe, there was a website that used to be called Gawker.
Yes, I remember Gawker.
Gawker.
They kind of blew it when they went after somebody who came back at them, which was Hulk Hogan.
Yes, Hulk Hogan. They basically ran some private videos of Hulk Hogan and basically made statements in articles. And Hulk Hogan came back and sued them with a sugar daddy who provided the money for the lawyers of someone whose reputation they had also destroyed, who had money. This is always a mistake. And basically used Hulk Hogan as a proxy to destroy Gawker, which they did. They did destroy Gawker, and they had to go out of business. They had to sell off the assets, and basically whoever bought the assets shut it down. There is no Gawker anymore. But disgraced former Gawker publisher, who basically was asked, you know, what was too salacious a story to be printed, and there isn't any such creature, essentially.
Probably not.
And they did. And what kind of you know, when asked what kind of backup or what kind of documentation you require, it was basically not much. This guy says, quote, Zen Buddhism needed to beat Breitbart. Well, Breitbart is a proxy, as far as he's concerned, for Trump.
Of course.
Now is Breitbart very pro-Trump? Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, they are. Very much so. Even when nobody else was. And I have read this thing a couple times. And to find out what he meant, a Zen Buddhism response. In some degree, there's a difference between Gawker and Breitbart, claimed Denton during an interview with DigiDay. Gawker is sensational, shameless news that is grounded in truth. Get that, grounded in truth. It doesn't necessarily have truth. It's grounded in truth. So there, maybe that's your Buddhism, sort of a dramatic version of the truth, but it is the truth, while Breitbart and fake news on Facebook are further escalation. They are not just a sensationalization of the truth, but also go beyond the truth.
Amazing.
Okay, Gawker got shut down because they went beyond the truth.
Yeah, that means lies.
Yeah, yeah. That means they lied. And that being said, this is the kind of stuff that's out there floating around. Now, granted, this was not about Trump directly, but this publisher of Gawker, Nick Denton, basically has come out and has said that he essentially hates Donald Trump. So we've also had an incident recently. There's a fellow talk show host named Michael Savage.
Yes.
And
I just heard about this one.
Yes, Michael Savage is an interesting guy. You may not like his style. You may like his style. He's not my cup of tea. And his position on an Article 5 convention, I think, is dead wrong. Nonetheless, I think he has the right to have a radio show where he espouses his particular viewpoint.
Absolutely.
And has the right to go out and have dinner any place that he would choose to do so that would serve him as a customer. And in fact, someone in San Francisco, where I believe he lives, mm-hmm. Has a different opinion. And that different opinion was that he decided to, a 74-year-old man, not particularly large, I think he's 5'6", and a thin man, and the attacker was something like 6'5", and you know, a thug.
And if Savage would have looked like Hulk Hogan, this would have been a different story.
This would have been a different story. But basically, essentially beat him bloody.
Yep.
While he was sitting at a restaurant having dinner by himself, well, with his dog. He was having dinner with his, and essentially kicked the dog as well.
Yes.
And essentially, someone had stepped in, and this Hulk of a thug basically punched that guy as well. And both, I believe, Mr. Savage and his attempted rescuer both put the fellow under a citizen's arrest. And when the cops came, They let him go.
Of course.
Now, why did this guy do it? He stated openly he did it because of Savage is a supporter of Donald Trump. Okay. Why was he let go? Well, Savage is seeking, at this point, a hate crime.
Right. He's looking for criminal penalties to be charged against this individual. And it makes no sense that the person was let go, except for the fact that somebody higher up has basically told the police that they're not going to bring charges.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything about it. This is a major problem. It is, again, San Francisco is virtually the capital of the lands of the fruits and nuts. It's not the capital of California, but it is the place where if you really want to do something exceedingly strange, weird, out there, beyond the pale, that's the place where you go.
Oh, absolutely.
And it seems that the administration of the city is making it possible for that to happen. The San Francisco, the same place that basically just pulled out of the Coalition for National Security. In other words, they're going to stop terrorism on their own, and that's to protect illegal immigrants, especially illegally Muslims that are here illegally. That's essentially the reason for that. And I, frankly, at some point, my prediction would be that they're going to get what they paid for.
Yes.
And that is, they're going to have an incident that could have been stopped had they had we closed the borders, the porous borders, to people coming in illegally. I'm not against legal immigration, folks. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a xenophobe. I don't fear foreigners. I fear foreigners who want to come here to do bad things to us. That's not xenophobia. That is patriotism. I don't want my country destroyed by people who come here seeking to undermine the United States of America and commit terrorist acts here.
Of course.
And I'm also against people coming here to essentially take advantage of the economic system and walk away without paying taxes and take jobs that Americans can take and run. For instance, one of the things that we constantly hear, and this is an aside, so we'll get back to it.
Okay.
We constantly hear, well, we have to do this because an American wouldn't take that job. Oh, that's where you're wrong. An American won't take that job at that rate of pay. An American will take a job if you pay a decent salary, a decent wage. Now, I don't want to play into the hands of the $15 an hour minimum wage. The correct minimum wage is zero.
And right, exactly.
The correct minimum wage is zero. In other words, the federal government needs to get out of the business of mandating how much you will pay someone. It should be a matter of individual contract. Good employees should be able to negotiate for more money. Bad employees should get shown the door and make less money. If you're a mediocre employee, you're good enough to stay, but not good enough as the guy who's making 12 or 15 bucks an hour. Sorry, you're only getting 9 or 10 bucks an hour. Because you're not as good as him. Watch what he does and emulate him. It's a very stimulating thing to come to the realization that you're not as good as somebody, but you can't have the potential to be as good as somebody. Now, does that mean that there are some people who will never be as good as somebody else?
Yes.
They're in the wrong profession. You haven't found your niche. Go find it.
We're never going to be Rush Limbaugh.
No, never.
So that's all right. But, you know, we know what our niche is, so that's all right.
Yeah, I'd like to make $38 million a year, but I don't see it happening.
No, I don't either. Well, you just have to pay it all in taxes. You're like,
that's
hey,
it. Yeah.
But, you know, again, so here this is still, the hits just keep coming, Chuck, because also what we've got as part of our March Madness lineup, my God, I think we could do a bracket with all this stuff. Which one of these crazy allegations and things that make you go, are going to get us to the promised land of either A, the liberals win and they disgrace Trump and send him packing, or B, their entire house of cards falls down around their ears, and they're left exposed for what they've really been for a long time, which is a subversive movement trying to destroy the American political system.
Yeah.
But so here's our next bracket contender, Chuck, and it comes from our friends at the Golden Arches, because just this morning, and this is breaking news, so you know we'll have it fifth hand or something by the time it gets, this gets on air on Saturday, but supposedly from the official Twitter account of McDonald's Corporation, you know, the Golden Arches, there was a tweet that went out this morning about the president, and basically says, quote, at Real Donald Trump, and that's his Twitter handle, because, you know, he's been known for tweeting back to people and tweeting things out, and he kind of created a firestorm with the whole thing with Obama earlier we talked about. He says, "You quote, at Real Donald Trump, you are actually a disgusting excuse of a president, and we would love to have at Barack Obama back. Also, you have tony hands," but I think they meant to say tiny hands.
Tiny hands,
they
yeah.
Just say, you know, because that's a shot at that the thing was done during the primary campaign. Well, McDonald's has now started walking this back as fast as they can walk it for a couple of reasons. Number one, they said that their account was hacked. That somebody, maybe a disgruntled former employee of McDonald's corporate who had access to the Twitter account, did this intentionally. But here's the other thing, and this is great because the Daily Mail, the British newspaper Daily Mail, has got a great article on this that we'll link to. But basically, Donald Trump is probably one of the biggest homers for McDonald's that you can possibly have. He's cut television commercials for McDonald's. He has basically prominently showcased McDonald's products in times, you know, and he's not doing a product placement. He likes their food.
He especially likes their French fries.
He likes their fries. Yeah. And so in June, in order to celebrate his Republican primary win, he posted a photo with him eating a Big Mac and fries. Now, folks, it doesn't get any more, you know, mundane than that, or any more of a clear indication that you really, if you're corporate McDonald's, you don't want to be communicating this kind of message out to someone who, number one, is in that position, and number two, has historically been in your corner and likes your product. But there's only one small little hiccup that makes this a really political issue, Chuck, and makes it another part of March Madness. This isn't necessarily an accidental tweet, although I could give that somebody, a disgruntled former employee, could have done this. I'm thinking it's more of a disgruntled current employee who just couldn't resist merging their past history with their current position. And I mean the communications director of the McDonald's Corporation, who, by and by, just happens to be, now, get this. Hold on, folks. The former communications consultant for Barack Obama, a guy by the name of Avi Wolf, who went over and was basically hired by McDonald's after he worked for the Obama administration to handle their communications, which would include their social media, Chuck, which is what Twitter is. It's social media. Well, I'm wondering if the heat of, you know, and the stress and the pressure of trying to pick your favorite bracket didn't get to this guy. And Thursday morning, right before the tournament tips off, he goes out with, and he wants to get his team in a bracket. So he fired off this tweet in order to make our March Madness bracket. And congratulations, Avi.
Yeah.
You made it. You are on. A matter of fact, I'm not sure what seed we'd give this one, but if it comes to find out that this actually was the work of Wolf directly, that's a number one seed with a bullet, because you know what? That takes an awful lot of shooting skill to shoot yourself so very cleanly in the middle of the foot.
You know, we started out, folks, some people love the comment sections of articles and some people hate them. And I understand why you could hate them. And I get a little ouchy sometimes when I read them, because some of the comments are just simply they're hard to take. Some of them are vulgar and nasty, but some of them are also very clever. And one of the things that someone had made the comment on the Rachel Maddow thing, that she had shot herself squarely in the foot. And someone said, too bad that she didn't try the same with her head. He goes, however, hitting her brain would have been extremely difficult, so it's a good thing she only shot herself in the foot. In other words, there wasn't much brain there when she did this. So you got to watch some of these comments because they are sometimes worth the price of admission.
Absolutely.
And also you get a kind of a feel for the zeitgeist. And right now, if you read comment sections, anytime something from Trump comes up, you will see the Trump derangement syndrome in full play, because people will make the wildest statements and claims. And in fact, talk about, you know, a thing, assassinations and assaults, all kinds of things that are had any Republican or any conservative suggested that of Barack Obama, they would have had the Secret Service in their lap within 24 hours.
Yes. Hey, and I've got to walk something back here, too. I kind of got ahead of myself. Avi Wolf is not the communications director. They're down the chain a little bit. The communications director who used to work for Barack Obama is Robert Gibbs.
That's the story I read. Yeah, I thought it was Gibbs.
Gibbs. Yeah. It's Gibbs. So I apologize because I
But Avi Wolf that. He's in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure that, okay, if this was Gibbs's workings, he'll get away with it because there's plausible deniability. You know,
yes.
I'm the communications director, but I don't handle the day-to-day operations.
Well, why do you think the first thing that came out and said was that the account had been hacked? Now, Twitter claims...
They only came out and said that 2 hours after the tweet went up and had been up.
Well, think about this, though. If it went up at 6 a.m., who's looking at the front page at 6 a.m.? Not that many people.
No.
Nobody's up moving around looking at that kind of stuff. You know what? When they start getting returned tweets back, that's when you find out, and that's what happened. They got returned tweets back on this thing, and somebody said, we better look at that. Now, did they get hacked? Twitter says yes.
Okay.
He says it's a spoof. They said, from their perspective, it looks like a spoof. Do I trust Twitter 100%?
No,
I do not. However, I do think, from a corporate standpoint, it would be rank idiocy to allow anyone who would put something like this up. This is a little bit like Nordstrom's throwing Ivanka's line out. When, in fact, that line is showing an increase in sales, what kind of trouble is Nordstrom in economically? They're in big trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you throw out a clothing line that is growing in sales?
Because it's political.
It's political. That's the only reason.
Well, Nordstrom's will be in our bracket, but I think they're going to be about a number 14 seed or something like that, because that was really kind of juvenile, and I don't think it's going to keep them in the big leagues.
No.
Now, there is another one that's going to get in the big leagues, and this one is a federal judge.
Oh, gosh.
A federal court judge, but U.S. District Court Judge Derek Watson, whose district is Hawaii.
Oh, yes.
And why is U.S. District Court Judge Derek Watson lining up to put on the uniform for our bracketology here today, Chuck? Because Derek Watson is the federal judge who a group of liberal organizations went to get an injunction against the president's newly revised travel ban executive order. And so, basically, right before it was supposed to take effect yesterday, on Wednesday, this judge, Derek Watson, basically shut it down and said that it discriminates on the basis of nationality. In other words, we can't, since we knew that the last one said something about Muslims, then this one must be with the same animus, and so therefore, regardless of what it says, we know what you really mean, and so we're going to shut you down on that basis. Well, very interesting thing has just come out in the media about this, Chuck. Judge Watson, when this was put in front of him, but before he made his ruling on Wednesday, had an interesting visitor that he sat down and had a talk with. Who was that visitor? Barack Hussein Obama. According to reports, Watson met with Obama a day before the requested temporary restraining order on Trump's new executive order. This is on redstatewatcher.com, which this is breaking news, folks. So here you have a district court judge in Hawaii. And why do you go to Hawaii, Chuck, for this? Why couldn't they file this in Chicago, San Francisco, or even Cincinnati to get this done?
That's Ninth Circuit, isn't it?
It's Ninth Circuit. That's right. And they filed it because, Hawaii has an influx of visitors who come in through the port in Hawaii.
Sure.
From foreign countries.
Yeah, mostly Asia.
Mostly Asia.
Australia, Asia, what we call the Far East, yeah.
So basically, why did Barack Obama take a trip to Hawaii, other than for vacation, to go specifically meet with the federal judge? And I don't know, I'm going to have to do some digging on this to find out if this was an Obama appointee, or in relation to a case regarding the current president's decision to restrict immigration into the United States and travel by people in countries that are targeted as terrorist holding countries, or ones that are sponsors of state-sponsored terrorism. Really makes you kind of wonder. And of course, what? As you talked about going down through the comments section, this one is, I'm flipping down through here, and of course it's a lot of people with all caps things, and of course that means you're yelling in your response. That's how, online, when you put it in all caps, it means you're yelling it. You got all that, but then, you said you either love or you hate the comment section. I love the comments, except for the one. Well, would you like to make $10,000 a month? It's like, yeah, okay, it's all spamming stuff. Okay, well, let's forget that noise. But the key is, Chuck, I think Watson really is shooting. I'm going to give him at least a 4 seed. I mean, because it really takes a lot of court awareness to know that to set up a meeting with the former administration the day before you make a ruling against the current administration.
It gets better. U.S. District Judge Derek Kahala Watson, who halted President Donald Trump's revised travel ban Wednesday, is a 1984 graduate of Kamehameha Schools who was in President Barack Obama's class at Harvard Law School.
Well, what do you know? An old law school buddy. Okay.
A law school student.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So, that doesn't really pass the smell test because that's going in the bracket. Okay, we've got some good stuff in the bracket now. And, folks, it's just going to keep going because, it's early yet. There's going to be an awful lot more that's going to be coming up in relation to a number of these issues. And we're going to be seeing that almost every one of these, Chuck, there's a link back to the Obama administration.
In virtually every case.
In virtually every case, there's a link back to somebody within the Obama administration. I wonder why that might be the case. Would you think that maybe Obama really wants to try to destroy Donald Trump? Why? He was an outgoing president. It has to be about his legacy, which Donald Trump is dismantling as quickly as he can possibly hope to dismantle it, including submitting a budget, which we now hope that the Congress will actually take up and pay attention to, a budget which completely defunds PBS, the National Endowment for the Arts, cuts the Environmental Protection Agency's budget by a third, and does a number of different things. So Mick Mulvaney, who is the director of Office of Budget Management now under Trump, has really put forth what they call a skinny budget. In other words, we're going to stop all this foolish spending. They're going to cut the Great Lakes Initiative, which is basically a way for an international or an interstate coalition to determine who gets to use the water in the Great Lakes.
Right.
That's an initiative that our darling governor has been all about, except for the fact that basically it gives up most of our rights, including the right to drill underneath the lake.
That's right. It essentially surrendered all the tremendous pool of natural gas underneath Lake Erie to Canada.
Indeed.
And in fact, you have to remember that, yes, Canada does own a big hunk of Lake Erie, but so do we. We've got the bottom third. They've got the top two-thirds.
Yes.
Now, that particular coalition, that it's controversial from a constitutional standpoint because of the prohibition against states being allowed to make interstate compacts without the approval of Congress. Apparently, they're saying that essentially that Congress has approved it, so it's okay. It's still a problem.
Still a problem.
But remember that the western states have been trying to steal the Great Lakes water for decades. The western states have been petitioning Arizona, Nevada, Utah, have been petitioning to get at the Great Lakes. And all you got to do is look at Lake Mead to see what they do with fresh water when they get a hold of it. Now, yeah, they've just come off a 7-year drought. That we'll be lucky if Lake Mead ever fills back up again, because when Hoover Dam was completed in the 30s, nobody lived there. Nobody lived in Las Vegas. Nobody lived in those parts. Now, Las Vegas is huge. There's a lot of people who have built up around that area based on the fact that Lake Mead was this quote-unquote inexhaustible supply of water out of the Colorado River. Well, it turns out it's not so inexhaustible. Lake Mead is down, like 40 feet? Maybe more? It's a mess, and they'll be lucky if they have 7 or 8 great rain years and great snow years in the Rockies, then yeah, that snow melt off will maybe fill Lake Mead up again if the places that draw from it actually practice conservation. I don't think there's a good chance of that.
No, there's probably not. And, of course, you know, we talked about on a previous program one of our other bracket contenders, which is Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood.
And we'll talk more about them. But, you know, here's an organization, Chuck, that not only doubles down but triples down on stupid. So I appreciate the fact that the Trump administration really has them out there tripping over their own tongues. Because we talked last week about how the offer was made to Planned Parenthood that, you know, we're going to, if you'll stop doing abortions, period, we will maintain the $500 million a year in federal subsidies that they received, and we might actually give you more if you just quit doing abortions, which is 3% of their market share, supposedly. It's much more than that, but let's not kid ourselves. But the point is, 3%. Planned Parenthood, from Cecile Richard to their, you know, chairman of their other division, said, no, can't do it. You know, that's horrible. You know, women will die in the streets. Well, no, what they did say, and this was a tweet from another Planned Parenthood official that basically said that if the Trump administration follows through with their threat against Planned Parenthood, there will be more babies being born, and that's horrible. That's the consequence of this. And I just had to sit there and think,
yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said that out loud, because it really gets to the idea that you haven't stepped away from the foundation from which you were built, which is Margaret Sanger's eugenics movement.
Eugenics movement, yep.
To do away with the less desirables in society.
Yep.
Mainly African Americans and anybody who was of an ethnicity that Margaret Sanger didn't
like.
Well,
Hispanics, Asians.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're all worried about Trump closing the door on immigration from terrorist supporting countries. You ought to be more worried about them leaving funding in place for an organization that's killing you off, your communities off, as you sit there and watch.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting too is that Representative Steve King, has been awarded the Neanderthal Award because he made the statement that you can't rebuild a civilization. He was actually quoting, I think, Geert Wilders.
Yes, he was.
From Holland, or from the Netherlands.
Who just recently lost his...
Just barely lost. Who basically said, you can't rebuild your culture with other people's babies. And that's absolutely true. And that was actually the purpose behind the 1965 Immigration Act that changed the impetus about who could come into the country and who couldn't.
Yes.
It was designed to change the culture of the United States, and we've made this statement before. I'll say it again, and I know this will get us the disclaimer. That's fine. It was about changing the culture of the United States.
Yes.
And that's also part of what open borders is about. We talked about this last week, I think, or maybe 2 weeks ago. It's also about keeping Social Security running because it's a Ponzi scheme. You got to have the base always has to broaden. Therefore, you got to get as many people in here as you can.
Yeah, and again, that's a situation where, since we've had abortion on demand since 1973, and we're closing in on 60 million American babies being slaughtered. You're right. You can't. King's right. You can't with bringing in people. You can't build the civilization. You change the civilization. And so you have to pay attention to this fact that, he gets a Neanderthal award and they call him a xenophobe and all that.
Yeah.
But the point is that you can't run away from what is a statistical fact. And as Germany is finding out right now, and as many other countries are finding out who are being overrun by radical Islamic forces, not wielding firearms and marching in step with behind tanks, but who are coming in across the borders and basically not assimilating into their culture, but changing the culture and forcing the people of those countries to assimilate to them.
Okay, take for instance London, England. London, England is essentially becoming a very quickly a Muslim enclave. It is a center. The mayor of London is a Muslim, and that's not horrific in itself. But the fact is that he has made statements that are sort of very nebulously in support for certain types of Islamic activism, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that it's too much of a stretch to say that he would like to see London. He'd like to see it in London because it would probably get him unelected real fast. But he's not necessarily out of support for certain movements in the Middle East that we would look upon as radical.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what happens. All you have to do also is look at near Detroit. What's the town up there? Dearborn. Dearborn in Detroit is essentially Muslim, Muslim majority, and in fact they are actively repressing Christians in that area and enforcing certain forms of Sharia law. So that's exactly what's going to happen when you change the culture, you change the basis of law. And that's what we're worried about. I personally am worried about that. I don't think it's paranoid at all. We see it all around us.
Right. No, you're right. It's not paranoid. But I'm going to give you something that is paranoid. And this is real quick. We have to touch on this. John McCain on the United States Senate floor just made a claim that Senator Rand Paul, one of his colleagues, was working for Vladimir Putin. Now, Chuck, that's number one in our bracket. They get a number one seed. John McCain gets a number one seed in our bracket. And as we go, this is going to develop because it's getting bigger. We'll talk about it more in our next program. But just so you understand, bracketology is looking pretty exciting around the political brackets.
We're going to have a lot to talk about in the next coming week. So we're no skipping programs. Okay, that being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. And please join us April 6th at 6 p.m. At the Villa Milano in Columbus on Truck Road for the Relationships Under Construction Banquet, and join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.
Relationships Under Construction invites you to attend their annual fundraising banquet on Thursday, April 6th at the Villa Milano. Relationships Under Construction is an international organization headquartered right here in Ohio. Relationships Under Construction teaches middle and high school students healthy relationships based on virtue, not physical intimacy. Help Relationships Under Construction reach more youth with the truth about relationships. To register for the Relationships Under Construction Banquet on April 6th, go to relationshipsunderconstruction.com.